So if you have a Bible, if you don't have an outline, the outlines are back there by the t-shirts, and we are in Acts chapter 25. Now, if you remember, the at-large context is beginning in Acts 21, 22. Paul is going back to Jerusalem. He's accused falsely of causing problem among the Jews. He's arrested, almost beaten to death. I won't tell the whole story, but the last place that we were at is his encounter with the governor Felix. And if you remember, Felix had a number of intentions. And if you look back at chapter 24, we kind of get in the last three verses kind of the whole gamut of his response and feelings and attitude towards what Paul is doing. Verse 25, so he's been calling Felix and Drusilla. Now remember, Drusilla was a Jewess, as it calls it in the King James. So she was a Jew. So there's probably a heightened understanding and a heightened concern in verse 24 telling us that. And so notice that it says in verse 24, and it says that they called him before them and heard him concerning the faith in the Messiah. Right? So don't again equate the word Christ with Jesus. It's meant to regard the Messiah, because he's speaking to a Jew here. And in verse 25, it says of Paul that he reasoned of righteousness, temperance, and the judgment to come. And here's the response, which seems to be very genuine. Felix trembled and answered, "Go thy way for this time. When I have a convenient season, I will call for thee." And then it kind of tells us what I interpret as a complexity of emotions, right? I don't see this as somehow you can't be sincere on one hand and then have ulterior motives on the other. And we kind of talked about that last time, which seems to be the case. He's sincere as he's listening to it, but there is a secondary or perhaps even a primary motive, and that is, you know, Paul has a lot of fame. Maybe I can get some money for releasing him, because it's evident, and it becomes evident over the next two chapters, that there is no case against Paul, and that statement's even made. And so in verse 27, it says, "But after 2 years, Porcius Festus came into Felix's room, and Felix, willing to show the Jews a pleasure, left Paul bound." So what this is meaning is that Festus is taking over the governorship where Felix was previously the governor. And so as we enter into chapter 25, Paul has been imprisoned for 2 years. If you remember, he's kind of on house arrest. He's given freedom to come and go a little bit. He's on house arrest, and we pick up in chapter 25 where the encounter with Festus kind of becomes the central part here. And really, this chapter is somewhat of a transitional chapter. We're not learning a lot of information, but it's really transitioning us to the next chapter, which is chapter 26, and probably the most famous account of all of Paul's imprisonings, and that's with King Agrippa. And so let's just look for a second. We covered already the first bullet point on our paper. But we'll read verses 1 through 5 here. It says this: "Now when Festus was coming to the province, after 3 days he ascended from Caesarea to Jerusalem. Then the high priest and the chief of the Jews informed him against Paul and besought him and desired favor against him that he would send for him to Jerusalem, laying wait in the way to kill him. But Festus answered that Paul should be kept at Caesarea and that he himself would depart shortly thither. Let them therefore," said he, "which among you are able, go down with me and accuse this man if there be any wickedness in him." And so, again, just some transitional information going on here. Shortly after Festus becomes the governor of this entire region, he goes to most likely the most explosive area of his rule. There's been a lot going on in Jerusalem. So he's going down there to visit, and it's not coincidental that he goes to this institution within Jerusalem that has a significant amount of power and influence over the people. And so he goes to the Sanhedrin, and immediately it tells us in verse 2 that the Sanhedrin court and the high priest, they begin to accuse Paul, and they're seeking for him to be brought to Jerusalem. But it tells us again the reason: just as he was leaving, they had had a plot. In his return, they were going to have a plot if they could get if they could convince Festus to bring him back. And so they've set up an ambush similar to the one in chapter 23 in order to kill him. Now, I don't know if Festus, of course, knew of this. Perhaps he did. Perhaps he didn't. obviously, Felix knew about what was going on here. That's why, what was his name? Lysias, I think, was the chief captain, had said, I'm going to bring all these soldiers to protect Paul on the way. That would have been a strange thing to happen. Why would we to transfer one prisoner, have, what was it, 460 or so soldiers? So it's, I think, easily inferred by the context that Felix became aware of, hey, there was a plot to assassinate him and to set an ambush. Whether Festus knew that, we don't really know in verses 1 through 5. But for whatever reason, he doesn't think that's appropriate, and he tells the Sanhedrin, if you want to basically come and lay your charges before him, then you need to come to Caesarea and do so, and to find if there's anything that he should be accused of. So anybody have any comments about anything in there? Again, it's just kind of some transitional information that we learn. Anything? All right, verse 6 says this, and when he had tarried among them more than 10 days, he went down unto Caesarea, and the next day, sitting on the judgment seat, commanded Paul to be brought. And when he was come, the Jews which came down from Jerusalem stood round about, and laid many and grievous complaints against Paul, which they could not prove. While he answered for himself, neither against the law of the Jews, neither against the temple, nor yet against Caesar, have I offended anything at all. But Festus, willing to do the Jews a pleasure, answered Paul and said, Wilt thou go up to Jerusalem and there be judged of these things before me? Then said Paul, I stand at Caesar's judgment seat, where I ought to be judged. To the Jews have I done no wrong, as thou very well knowest. For if I be an offender or have committed anything worthy of death, I refuse not to die. But if there be none of these things whereof these accuse me, no man may deliver me unto them. I appeal unto Caesar. Then Festus, when he had conferred with the council, answered, Hast thou appealed unto Caesar? Unto Caesar shalt thou go. So again, just some basic information that's occurring here in this series of court cases, or this 10 days after he meets with the Sanhedrin, he travels back to Caesarea. The day after his return, he brings Paul before him. So to me, I assume that's a pretty significant thing. If the day after his return, this is the first thing. So again, in some of these details, and maybe I'm reading into them too far, you can tell me if you think I am. He becomes the leader. Immediately he travels to Jerusalem. Immediately after getting to Jerusalem, he meets with the Sanhedrin court. There they inform him of all these accusations against Paul. He goes back to Caesarea and invites them to come. As soon as he gets back, he calls them before him, allows them to make their accusations, and then he begins to tilt the scales of the court case by suggesting that we go back to Jerusalem and try to hold this case again, or perhaps call more witnesses, whatever might be the case. And so, obviously, this seems like a very significant thing to Festus, because all of these things are happening very quickly. He's dealing very closely with the Sanhedrin court. And so, basically, the Sanhedrin, while they're in Caesarea, they come, and it quotes and says, many and grievous complaints, despite the fact, are brought before him, despite the fact that nothing could be proven. And basically, Paul answers for himself and says, there's no proof. You can't prove that I've done anything wrong with the civil law, nothing in regards to the law of the Jews, the customs of the temple. You cannot prove anything. So he consults with the council and essentially wants to take him back to Jerusalem. But in order to avoid that, evidently, there is a right for a Roman citizen to appeal unto Caesar and to go to Rome. And so that's exactly what Paul does. Now, the rest of the narrative in the book of Acts is guided by this request. So basically, Paul, by civil law, has to make it to Rome. Well, we also know that Paul has been promised by the Lord that he's going to make it to Rome. And so perhaps this is what became evident to Paul, was that the way I'm going to get to Rome is by just appealing unto Caesar, which of course would have been the high court or the highest decision maker in the land or in the empire. Anybody have any comments, thoughts, questions you want to bring up? Again, this is just a lot of transitional information, and so there's nothing until really the next part that we're going to get to, or the next chapter, which we may jump into some tonight. Any thoughts?
It's not important, but I think Drusilla had an influence on Festus. Mm-hmm. So when he did come, he got Paul right away.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, that would seem...
being a Jew.
Mm-hmm. That would seem a logical conclusion to come to, that, hey, she wants to know more. She's informed about all of these things. And so, absolutely. Somebody else have a comment? All right, let's look at verse 13, bottom of the page 2 on your outline. It says this: "And after certain days, King Agrippa and Bernice came unto Caesar to salute Festus." Now, I want you to notice that, because in our minds, we look at this as like a king is above a governor. In this particular case, that is not true. King Agrippa and Bernice are actually beneath Festus. Okay? One of the ways we can know that, although we can know this historically, they came to honor Festus. Right? And that word immediately translated is pay their respects to him. And so, King Agrippa is over the province of Judea where Jerusalem is at. And so this is kind of a kindness that Festus is showing by saying, hey, this case originated in your jurisdiction. It has been passed along to me. Ultimately, I'm of a higher authority than what you are, so I'm going to make this decision. And actually, the decision we're going to learn is out of both of our hands. But as a courtesy, I want you to come. Now, he does that, whether it's a courtesy or whether he does this, the particular guise that he articulates is, I have to write something to Caesar. Help me write an explanation of why he's coming to you. And so perhaps, if it's well-intended, he's saying, you're an expert, and that's actually explains in the next chapter. If you remember in Acts 26, when Paul continues to refer to King Agrippa, and he says, these things were not done in a corner. I know that you're, I can't remember what the word he uses, but essentially an expert in these customs. That's because he was the leader of that small province of Judea stationed there in Jerusalem. And so, Bernice and King Agrippa come, but just note, King Agrippa is beneath in political authority the man he's coming behind, but he's going to tell us in a moment, hey, I want you to help me write whatever explanation to Caesar is needful for this to be the case. And so one of the ways we can discern that from the text directly is just where it says in verse 13, they came to salute him or pay homage or to pay their respects to Festus. Verse 14, and when they had been there many days, Festus declared Paul's case unto the king, saying, there is a certain man left in bonds by Felix, about whom, when I was at Jerusalem, the chief priest and the elders of the Jews informed me, desiring to have judgment against him. Now this isn't, I don't know why this is a something I'm making note of at the moment, but to us, the personalities and the way those institutions work are kind of vague and not fully understood. But Festus is speaking to somebody who understands the political dynamics. Right, that we all know, even in the United States, there's all these, unless you're an American citizen and you've lived in an area for a long time. So, for example, in Warren County, I don't really know all the dynamics. I've not been here long enough. But you know that there are dynamics that trace back oftentimes decades that have to do with certain positions, certain organizations working together, the good old boys club, things that are not necessarily legal but cultural that are wrapped up within that legal framework. And so as I'm reading this, I'm seeing Festus looking to King Agrippa, who's knowledgeable about this, who both know the dynamics that are involved, and he is seeking his guidance in what to do in bringing this case before him. Verse 15 just kind of stirs that thought for a moment. Verse 16, to whom I answered, It is not the manner of the Romans to deliver any man to die before that which he is accused have the accusers face to face. Now, this should sound familiar to all of us, because in the United States, we have an amendment that ensures this right, that we're allowed to face our accusers. And so, that was a normal part of Roman law, and that's what Caesar is saying. Paul cannot just be sentenced to death. Now that I'm the presiding authority, he has to face his accusers in a court of law. And that he has the right, or have license, to answer for himself. Looking to page 3 now. Concerning the crime laid against him. Therefore, when they were come hither, without any delay on the morrow, I sat on the judgment seat and commanded the man to be brought forth. So notice verse 17 is telling us the speedy nature of it. Without any delay, we heard this case. Against whom, when the accusers stood up, they brought none accusation of such thing as I supposed. Now, I went back and looked at this. If you look on page 3, the third sub-bullet point, here's Festus' summary of the matter behind closed doors with King Agrippa and Bernice. They brought none accusation of such thing as I supposed, or not what I was expecting, is what the exact translation of that is. So, it seems like he's saying, I expected there to be something more substantive here. There wasn't. But had certain questions against him of their own superstition. Now remember, we learned in Acts 16, or rather Acts 17, the word superstition means what? Religion. So it has something to do with their religion. Okay? And one Jesus, which was dead, who Paul affirmed to be alive. And because I doubted of such manner of questions, I asked him whether he would go to Jerusalem and there be judged of these matters. But when Paul had appealed to be reserved under the hearing of Augustus, I commanded him to be kept till I might send him to Caesar. Then Agrippa said unto Festus, I would also hear the man myself. Tomorrow, said he, thou shalt hear him. Okay, so they've come to pay their respects. King Agrippa is the ruler over Judea and the province over where Jerusalem is located. Bullet point 2. So we learn behind closed doors the beliefs that Festus has that he's relating here. Felix left Paul in prison for Festus to judge, so I inherited this problem. After becoming governor, Festus met with the Sanhedrin, so he tells that whole story of how they got there. He says, you know what, basically there's not really a case here. They did not bring anything that I was expecting. It's something really having to do with their religion, something about a man named Jesus. They say he's dead. Paul says he's alive. Which does just so happen to be the crux of all of Christianity. Right? So, as a civil matter, this is not so significant. But as a spiritual religious matter, this is of the utmost significance. And I think we have to be glad that that is how Festus is seeing this. That's the heart of the question. And so, even though it's put in the framework of civil accusations, really I'm glad that Festus was able to deduce at the heart of the disagreement has something to do with Jesus, who they say is dead and Paul says is alive. And he just tells him of his appeal unto Caesar. And so, Festus consented to the request and agreed to let him testify the next day. So King Agrippa is going to hear him on the next day. Anybody have any thoughts? Any thoughts about this so far? All right, so we'll jump into the last portion of 25, then we'll get into 26. And so this next section, and there's no chapter 26 outline back there yet. So this next section of 25, I kind of wish they would incorporate this in chapter 26. Because this is the context of everything. So this is setting up for us, and in my mind, this is how we get our visual of throughout this court process and all of his appeals, we can kind of get a little bit of visuals when he stood before the Sanhedrin, when he and the writer Luke does a pretty good job of this, but here is a very definite envision what you're seeing here, or what is being explained here, rather. It says on verse 23, and on the morrow when Agrippa was come, and Bernice with great pomp, and was entered into the place of hearing, What the place of hearing means translated is the auditorium. Okay, so they enter in to this big auditorium. There's a whole lot of pomp and circumstance surrounding their entrance here, even so much that the chief captains and principal men of the city are commanded by Festus to accompany them in. And so this is a city event. This is a big thing going on here. Great pomp and circumstance. King Agrippa is walking in. Bernice is walking in. Great men, chief captains, so military leaders, principal men of the city. They're making a to-do of this. And Festus said, King Agrippa, so this is him, as everybody is entered in. There's a assumed to be, and I think safely assumed to be, a very packed house of important people. Paul's going to be brought before them in a minute. Here Festus stands up to kind of give the introduction to this grand event. And Festus said, King Agrippa and all men which are here present with us, ye see this man, about whom all the multitude of the Jews have dealt with me, both at Jerusalem and also here, crying that he ought not to live any longer. When I found that he had committed nothing worthy of death, and that he himself had appealed to Augustus, I have determined to send him, of whom I have no certain thing to write unto my Lord. So that's an important part of what's going on here. He says, I don't have anything to write to the one above me. Right? Wherefore, I have brought him forth before you, and specially before thee, O King Agrippa, that after examination had, I might have somewhat to write. So this is more of a investigation. In one, at least that's what he's saying. So I'll kind of pose this question to you. Do you think that is really what the motive is here? Is that he is saying, I need to write something to him? So I'm glad everybody's here. King Agrippa in particular, we want to hear what your thoughts are. But let's kind of break down for a moment all the layers to this. So let's start with perhaps the most important one, and that is, what is the purpose of God in this? Because I find this pretty neat. This is a completely unnecessary thing in every civil regard. Every religious regard, this is completely unnecessary. But it happens for a spiritual purpose. That would be what? All right, so if you remember a few chapters ago when we talked about the differences in Acts and all the accounts of Paul's salvation experience, one of the things that he says was that he would be delivered before kings and the Gentiles. So this is a fulfillment of that right here, right? That God is wanting the Apostle Paul to testify before all these civil leaders. And so we can see here, as nerve-wracking as it may have been for Paul, now he's going to come in here bound, so he's going to have chains on him. Probably not looking the best if he's in the condition that he's in, but God has a purpose in it. What's perhaps another spiritual purpose that God might have in orchestrating all this? And what do you think the intent of Festus is? Is there something in the details of all this that you're saying, eh, it doesn't seem like his ulterior motive is really just to write a letter to King Augustus?
He's looking for someone to make a decision for him and give him justified reason to send him.
All right, so you're saying he's kind of like a pilot.
He's kind of like a pilot, yeah.
I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to be solely responsible for whatever happens to him. All right, somebody else. What seems to you to be Festus's angle here?
Obviously, Festus thought that he didn't think that the Jews, he thought it was a religious matter. Romans were pretty secular. So he maybe he wanted to expose that the Jews really didn't have a leg to stand on, especially under Roman law.
And perhaps help maintain peace in Jerusalem. Because remember, this organization, the Sanhedrin, is a powerful organization that affects all these people's rule. And so he comes to a conclusion. He articulates that. Felix comes to a conclusion. He articulates that. Now, somebody who's the leader of that actual region comes to the same conclusion. Perhaps this is a political attempt to somewhat lessen the effect or the outcry of the Jews. Because remember, just a few chapters ago, Paul is being beaten in the street to death. He's known by the 10,000s. Converted 10,000s of people around the world about the Jews. So he is enemy number one since the passing or since the resurrection of Christ. He is enemy number one. And he's been exposed as that throughout the book of Acts. Somebody else have a thought about that?
Now, even the Holy Spirit's working.
What's that?
Even the Holy Spirit's working.
Okay, so maybe there's an extent to which there are all these secular reasons, but there's also a spiritual driver that could be a part of this. Now, what's going to happen in chapter 26 is that Festus, after hearing more from Paul, is going to have a certain response. So in chapter 26, and we'll get to it here in just a minute, King Agrippa and Bernice kind of become the central focus of the chapter. But remember, Festus is still here. And truly, he's the presiding legal authority. It's just now, Festus has effectively transferred everybody's attention to Agrippa and Bernice. They're hearing this for the first time. They're seeing this for the first time. And he has even drummed up in his introduction, "We want to hear what all you great men have to say, but in particular, King Agrippa, we're all looking to you to help us write to Caesar what we need to write to inform him about this prisoner that's going to come before him." And so, to me, I can also see a little bit of trying to pass the buck off to Agrippa, the attention off to him, that he's not in the hot seat. So King Agrippa becomes our focus here in chapter 26. So let's read verse 27. It says, "For it seemeth to me," this is Festus speaking, "unreasonable to send a prisoner and not withal to signify the crimes laid against him." And so he's leaning very heavy into that being his motivation for allowing Agrippa to hear him. Anybody have any thoughts so far of what we've got in the lead up to Acts 26?